Sit down, stand ups. And welcome again to Sit Down, Stand Ups. I'm John DeCaulis.
I'm Tim Banker. And we have a first.
Yes.
We have two guests today. And on Sit Down, Stand Ups, we have Ted Wilson.
Hello.
Hi, Ted. And Brian Williams.
Nice to be here, Tim.
And I figured this out already. If you switch their names around, we have Ted Williams and Brian Wilson on the show. A famous
well,
athlete.
That's what I'm telling everybody.
Yeah, I'd probably promote it that way.
Yeah, I think, write that down. That's a good idea.
That's right, all right.
That's pretty clever.
Well, I just thought of it
you
now.
You should, like, do comedy.
Maybe.
Up to this point, this is kind of neat. It, not only is it the first time that we've had two people on the show, but up to this point, we've had comedians, established comedians. This is the first time we've had two guys who, basically, you've been doing this for less than 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brian?
About the same time, yeah, less than 2 years, yeah.
So did you start together?
Yeah, essentially, I think we did. We kind of started putting that open mic night together at the Zanies in St. Charles. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that was the first time both of us really went on stage with an actual, you know, set.
Right, I think you have one more week ahead of me.
Oh,
Brian,
so I did start first. Yeah, I did start first.
You did start
came
one week
later.
Before?
Yes.
Okay.
So how long have you two been married? You know each other for a while, correct?
We met.
When did they make it legal, Tim? Because that's probably when you can track that back to.
Yeah, he just was coming to Zanies a lot. I worked there, obviously, and he was coming a lot with some friends to shows, and then started talking open mics, and that's how it happened, I guess.
Yep.
So let me ask you a question. Before you even started doing stand-up, you would watch these shows. When you started watching these shows, did you think, I'm watching these because I hope I can be up there one day? Or are you just there to see the show? At what point does it click?
I don't know that I ever thought, actually watching somebody like, oh, I could be up there, oh, I could do that. I kept a decent amount of respect for whoever it was that was on stage. Mm-hmm. I think that there, any time you've ever made anyone laugh, you know how good it feels. And so when you'd see someone doing it to a room of people, I guess I'd be lying if I said I didn't think I could or wanted to at some point, or you know, envied that feeling they were getting for making the whole room laugh. But they're good enough comedians that you don't think, oh, I could do that. I never really thought that. But I thought I'd like to give it a shot, for sure.
Right. How about you? How about you, Ted?
Yeah, it was a similar thing. Like, I'd always seen comedy growing up, and I never, same thing with Brian with respect thing. I never thought, well, I can do better than those people. But, you know, I'd go to see the shows at Zanies and over again and just see, get more familiar with the ins and outs of it. And then I went to my first open mic, and I said, well, I could do this.
Yeah.
This I could do. And it wasn't as intimidating, it wasn't as scary, because you could see all levels of people doing it.
That's interesting.
And that made it seem more obtainable.
Yeah, I've told a lot of people that when they come to a show and I say, you should try it out, and they say, oh, I can't. I say, go to an open mic. At least you'll go to an open mic and you'll go, okay, well, I can do that. Because, yeah, there's going to be some awfulness about all of them.
It's kind of like the bunny hill, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
When you see people going down those huge hills, it's, oh, no. But when the bunny hill, oh, okay, that's
my yeah,
that's
my
slide on my face. I can do that, sure, no problem.
I've done that on stage. So, Ted, you talk about working other occupations on stage. So tell us about that and how it steered you into stand-up.
Yeah, I try to talk about stuff as if I'm not doing that anymore, because I don't want people to get the impression like, oh, I just came to watch some IT jock come up here and tell some jokes.
Right.
So I say, like, this is from my past, and these are funny stories that you guys might be able to relate to, because everyone has usually worked somewhere where there's an IT department. So it's stuff like that. Like, I try to relate to what people know, but not think like, oh, well, this is just some schmuck doing this on the side.
Right,
kind of thing.
Right. And I'm one of those schmucks. I always did something on the side.
Yeah, that's true.
Honestly, you pretty much have to. It's for some people, for most of us. But you don't want to give the... It kind of breaks the illusion when they...
No, I get
you. Just came off work and now you're up here on stage.
No, I get you.
But go back to, as you're growing up, Tim and I would probably say that we were both funny growing up, or people in the neighborhood thought we were funny. Is that the same for you?
People would tell you that, or, you know, if you make the class laugh, you know it. It wasn't an accident.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess you kind of knew you were funny, but to try and think I could do that just seemed like a stretch, you know, until you actually got on stage and started. It still seems like a stretch. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't clueless to that fact that people had laughed at me before with me, at me.
And probably a little different for you because you've worked at Zany's. I mean, you actually, one of your jobs is to work in the comedy club, so you deal with comics every single week.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's helped quite a bit. I get maybe in some of the do's and don'ts, you know, maybe not so much watching, but talking to comedians like you guys a lot and getting advice. The piece about not talking about other jobs is one of the pieces of advice Ted and I have gotten that's been very helpful about being on stage. But getting advice from comedians, you know, off stage, and then, you know, watching that many shows. I mean, yeah, you can't help but see things that do work, things that don't work, or at the very least, you know, things I would want to do or things I wouldn't want to do. And so that's been a very good guide and gathering all of that experience just while at work. You know, seeing 4 or 5 comedy shows a weekend helps a lot.
Yeah, it's, you know, think about that. We didn't have that opportunity to watch that many shows. We pretty much got into it right away.
Right.
But to sit there for a couple of years and like, wow, you know, that's actually pretty good. Are you funny at work, Ted? Do people think you're funny at work?
Well, it's funny. Like, you're talking about how you started, and both of my parents were teachers. So growing up, like, my dad was my middle school principal. So I would have to bite my lip. I'd have to be, you know, the good kid. I couldn't get in trouble because, you know, it would reflect poorly on them and the community, whatever, all that garbage like that. But then I would see other people, like, I would see people make jokes, and I'm like, oh, I could have made a better joke. Or I would see an opportunity, and you'd see 10 seconds go by, and then finally someone would make a joke, and I've been biting my lip that whole time. I would say, I wish I would have said this, or I could have said this. And then one day I said, the hell with it. I just started talking and making those jokes, and it was like, you know, I was a late bloomer. It just snapped, like, oh, this guy's been funny the whole time. We just thought he was, you know, just that jerk that sat in the back. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was just weird. Like, I, similar to like how Brian got to watch professional comedians do their, you know, do their trade for years, I got to watch everyone else make jokes and bomb in school, and then I could go, oh, well, that worked, that didn't work, and I could, you know, kind of build myself around that. It was,
you know, this goes, and a question for you, Tim, because as a comedian, we always talk about, you know, it's one thing for a comedian to make us laugh on stage, but to me, it's much more important if they make me laugh off stage.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, looking, when I first met both of you, I remember going, wow, you have a tremendous sense of timing. Mm-hmm. Both of you. It was very natural, and you made me laugh off stage. Do you feel that holds true for you, that people off stage?
I think I respect them more as a comic if they're naturally funny. You know, otherwise, you're a technician. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where you learn to write jokes or you learn to tell jokes. And that doesn't sit well with me. You know, it's inside all of you, and it's definitely apparent that you love comedy and it's within you. To do it on stage, that's magnificent. You talked about the magic of hearing that laughter.
Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah. I just, when you'd hear a room blow up, it's just, right. Even if you didn't tell that joke, you'd get a rush. You'd go, oh, mm-hmm. man. And I'd go to comics afterwards, like, oh, man, that killed. Or, oh, you know, and to see their kind of reaction afterwards. And I think anybody who's ever made anybody laugh just knows where that little spot is that gets tickled when you do it. And you're like, oh, you want to chase that.
I know. And Tim, good luck someday.
Yeah.
Let's go back, because we have asked other comics this about their process of writing. Do you sit down and write, or do you just, it just happens when you're driving? Now, Brian, for those who don't know this, Brian also drives a hearse.
Really? So, I mean, for fun? Yeah. Is it the party hearse?
I think I took the traditional route of hearse driver to comedian. Yeah. it's a little cliche, but... I try not to write in the hearse as much. I would guess, Ted and I talk a lot about this, about how we write, and that's what, I don't, like, take a block of time and say I'm going to sit down and write at this point.
Okay.
I kind of just keep a list, like, I have just a list in my phone of different things and bits I've thought of over time. And more so than sitting down to write, what I'll do is I'll go back and reference that. And maybe I thought of it 6 months ago, a year ago, something like that, and it just didn't click. I thought it was a funny premise or something. When I look at it again, maybe something else sticks out to me. And then the other thing is, too, is I might go a couple weeks, couple months without ever, you know, coming up with something I like to add to it or anything. And then in one day, 3 things will happen, and I'll just, oh, gosh, and I'll write all of them down, and I'll figure out a way. So sometimes it's more of like a lightning bolt of inspiration than
it
is sitting down and really drawing out something that has come to you.
Same question for you, Ted.
Well, yeah, this is like when we were talking about it, I started seeing the people at the open mic and I said I could do that, and then it was time for me to do it. I realized I don't have any material. What was I thinking? So,
well, I'm glad you didn't say that once you got on stage.
Right, well, it pretty much came out that way. They could figure it out. But I was just going back to stories I had been telling my whole life, like funny stories or anecdotes that had happened to me, and that's how it started. And I don't use any of those stories anymore. Well, I use one, but most of those just kind of fell away because, like I tell them in my recent set is I do a lot of driving. I do that, and just like Brian, stuff will just hit me. I'm like, oh, that's funny, and I'll jot it down or do a little voice message, and then I'll go back when it's time to actually set something up. I'll go back and I'll look at how many things actually kind of tie in together, and then I can formulate a story with that. But it literally, like Brian says, I cannot sit down and just say, well, this is the time to be funny. It just has to happen naturally.
Now, I have a little hip. This is our first tip for sit-down stand-ups.
Good.
Something that I do, because I tend to drive a lot, if you think of something and you can't write it down, okay, Google.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And say note to self, and they'll ask you what you want to say, and it'll email it to you, to your own email.
That's kind of the fun part, is the voice recognition, is I'll do that, and then I'll finally stop and get somewhere and read it, and I'll go, well, this autocorrect messed it up or something.
No, that's just how you...
I'm going, what
the, how you write
was this the joke? And
If you heard that, my phone just responded just by saying, okay,
she just went off.
That's right. She should just be quiet right
we
now.
We have four guests. We have four guests.
That's right. She's doing my jokes. That's what she's doing.
This. Come on, Google. Come on, Google.
But I've even found, too, some of, like, in the sets that I've done, sometimes the performance is a good way to sort of write, because you realize on stage what is and isn't working, or something you'll just say at one time that was never part of what you had written down, and it worked, and you went, that's staying. And so that's a little bit part of the writing of the actual set, too, I find.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're at a show tonight here at the Row. Ted, you performed tonight. This is your first time featuring, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
So run us through, like, what are your thoughts prior to going up? What's going on today?
Well, it was weird. Like Brian said, when I do it, I like to practice. I like to run the whole thing through at my house. I just like to go from start to finish. But I must have done it 7 times, and I don't think it was the same once. Because I would say something one way. I'm like, oh, that seemed funnier to me, or that seems to be a better timing to this part. And then I got here, and I got on stage, and all of that seemed to just go right up my brain. But I don't know what it was. But I had a great time, and it's fun. And I understand I'm up and coming, and I'm learning. But I had a lot of people here that came out to support me. And that's just great, too. Even if not everyone thought everything that I did was funny, just to see that people are spending their time to come out and support me. It's just a great feeling. So
that's good.
It's a great time.
That's really good.
I can't.
Your mom was in the audience.
Yes, that's correct. And I appreciate that Preston started out by telling jokes.
Yes.
Dick jokes to moms.
Yes.
That was good. I
thought
was great.
Very apropos.
And it's not even Mother's Day.
It's not even Mother's Day.
Well, we're going to take a short break.
Okay.
Because we have more that we want to talk to Brian and Ted about. But we'll be back in just a moment.
Okay, Northwest Carpet Cleaning commercial, take one.
Northwest Carpet Cleaning brought the art of carpet cleaning to the new world on the Mayflower with the Pilgrims way back.
Hold on. That's not in the script. It says here they've been serving Chicago area since 2002.
Well, Northwest Carpet Cleaning helped with the Civil War with their friendly staff and great prices.
Yeah. Listen, they have a friendly staff and great prices, but I don't think they...
Northwest Carpet Cleaning brings peace and harmony to the whole world with their earth-friendly solutions.
Yeah, okay, I get what you're saying, but you don't have to make a lot of fancy claims if you give great service and quality carpet cleaning at great prices. That's exactly what Northwest Carpet Cleaning has been doing for their loyal customers since 2002.
So they didn't find the cure for hiccups?
No.
Northwest Carpet Cleaning, the first carpet cleaning on Mars!
Okay, well, not now, but, you know, maybe someday.
Call Northwest Carpet Cleaning for a free estimate, 847-255-6110, or visit their website at northwestcarpetcleaning.com.
Hey, we're back with Sit Down Stand-Ups, sitting with
Tim Becker.
And, of course, Brian Williams and Ted Wilson. Let me clarify, Ted Wilson with two L's.
Thank you, Jim.
Oh, that's very important. That is very important. We've spent a lot of time straightening that out.
Well, Brian Williams was actually installed as a reporter in Afghanistan. Wasn't that the news guy, Brian Williams?
Who made up
that story about...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It's fun.
God, you really do get around. Hearse?
Yeah. My resume is very colorful, if not all that correct. But
now, is there another famous Ted Wilson?
I don't think so. It is. I don't care if you
another.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you, Brian. Just bring me right back down to earth.
This is what I talked about, being funny off stage.
Like, I don't care if you pronounce the invisible Z or not. Just spell it right on the check.
Exactly. You had a performance tonight. Brian, you're going to get your first shot to middle, I think, in May?
May, correct.
Not mistake. Yeah. So you're watching Ted up there tonight. What's going through your head thinking about what's coming up in May for you?
Tonight, watching him, just a little bit about, we've talked a lot about the time and how it felt like it took forever to feel like you could get up and do 10 minutes, and to double that is like, how am I going to get all that? So we've talked a lot over the last few weeks and couple months about some of that process. And was it, well, are you going to try and write a whole another 10 minutes? Are you going to try and take stuff you've already got and work it in? That sort of thing. So really just watching him, it just makes me want to continue to prepare. You know, I just, as long as I prepare enough, then I'll feel, you know, confident enough to go out there and do it, and win, lose, or draw, whatever. As long as I felt like I prepared enough, then I can't really complain.
Now, have you guys ever written together for each other and together? Because, I mean, you know each other. You kind of
had the same groundhog joke tonight, didn't you?
So. I did. No, we do kind of sometimes rehearse in front of each other and get each other's feedback, but we don't actually start from the beginning together. It's more of, hey, here's what I've got. What's your feedback for it? And we'll change it based on that, but we've never sat down and actually done any real writing together.
Okay. Well,
a lot of times on our rides back and forth to clubs or shows and stuff, that's where we'll kind of take scenarios and improvise them in the car, and we might come up with a different thing here or there that we didn't see. And
because you're relatively, and I say this relatively new, because Tim and I and Mike Toomey, who is on stage right now, we started together, we've been doing it 35 years. Do you tend to get, like, I don't know how, what goes through your head when you see a Toomey who you know is going to just knock it out of the ballpark, okay? His laughter is way up here. No matter what you do at this point, it's not going to click the same way. Does that mess with you?
I think it did at first, but, like, you know, I was out here tonight, and I was like, well, this crowd apparently can't make noise at all, and now Toomey's on stage, and it sounds like we're next to a stadium. You know what I mean?
Well, you warmed them up for right. is what I...
Good job.
I killed all the ones that were almost dead, was the plan. But Brian and I have talked to that, and we've learned that having, you know, come to this at a different level and seeing all these comedians, that some people just aren't ready to laugh until that final person comes up, or sometimes the room, like Tim says, the room just isn't warm until they've had a few drinks in them, so the host really has a tough time. The feature, if they're not dynamite, then they're not going to have it. By the time the feature comes, usually the name that people want to see, you just got to just expect that they're going to knock it out of the park because that's what their job is. So it doesn't affect me mentally the way it did the first time.
Now, Tim and I, at this point, when was the last time you videotaped or filmed yourself?
1987, I think.
Yeah, and that's probably really, as far back as I go. Yeah, that's true. And we do New Year's Eve shows where we videotape them every year, or we record them every year. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched one. You go back. You're going to go back and watch your set.
Yeah, I'm going to go back, and the first two words that come to my head without even seeing my set is slow down. I already know it. I already know that was a problem I had. But like Brian said, with the timing, you try to go from 5 minutes to 10 minutes to now, you know, 20 plus minutes. And in my head, I was like, I only have 20 minutes. Clearly, I had 28, and I was trying to cram it into an 18-minute slot. That was my problem. I get that.
Right.
Yeah, I'll watch it, and I will critique myself because I can't get better unless I, you know, work at it.
No, and I commend you both that you are willing to do that. Did you do that from the beginning, Tim? Did you record yourself? We didn't. Now, granted, we didn't videotape. It wasn't.
No, I did a lot of audio tape. They had a cassette deck at the Comedy Cottage in the back, and you'd pop a tape in, and you'd hit record. Yeah, I like to listen to that, and I'd go, why did I say that? Or what was the purpose of that? But you do learn from listening to yourself, and I give you credit, because as new as both of you are, you know the signs. You know what to look for. You know that if something's wrong, you know that there's a way to fix it. So that's good. You've got the instincts inside of you to be able to, you know, correct the things that you may think that are wrong.
I would think at this point one of the hardest things is the ups and downs. where you might have a 5-minute set that you're just like, wow, that went really well. And then the next time you're like, what happened? You know, does that, how often are you performing at this point?
I don't probably perform maybe as much as I should. A few times a month, a couple of open mic gigs and that sort of thing. But yeah, the ups and downs, for me, it's more like if they laugh, I'm like, wow, where did that come from? And when they don't, I'm like, okay. You know,
that's the Brian I remember.
Yeah. No, I mean, I did a little bit of improv, and you kind of just go backstage and you say, okay, this could bomb, but we're just going to go out there and do it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by like preparing. Like, that's why another reason I'll watch it back is if I watch it back and I did the set I wanted to do, whether the audience loved it or hated it, I can't do anything about that afterwards. So it doesn't really affect me a ton. The swings of it, not to say that I've had too many high ones, you know, but no, so far I don't think that's been a real big difficulty in working on that. Coming up with new stuff is by far the hardest for me, but dealing with those swings hasn't been that difficult.
Yeah, and I'll agree. I mean, as I was walking off the stage today, I could feel John DeCosta's phone number fading from my phone because I feel we're never going to do this again. But no,
can't. I vaguely remember who you are.
I'm Ted Williams. I'm a famous baseball player.
Oh, God, I would book you anytime.
But no, and the thing, it's not the highs and lows for me, which, because I like Brian says, it's not as frequent for everyone. Like, I have a high, I have a low, that's fine. But it's the fact that even if I don't do well or I don't feel like it did well and all the people that come up and say, oh, you did great, and great for your pity, applause, I appreciate that. But it's the fact that no one can take this away from me now. I've done it. If I never do it again, it's an experience that I will treasure forever because it's so much fun. Even if you aren't at the highs of the highs or you go to the lows of the lows, it's such an experience, and I cannot imagine ever not doing it.
Based on what you just said, I'll point out to you that baseball and comedy are very much the same.
Yes.
And so many comics love baseball because there's always the next at bat. It doesn't matter what happened. Last night's show, it's forgotten. People won't remember your name. People still call Jerry Seinfeld Jerry Steinfeld, you know, and he's been around forever. So there's always the next at bat to bring yourself up and say, okay, now I know what I'm doing and I'm going to have a good time.
You know, we sat on the stairs and watched your show. And it was so funny because this is what I'm most proud of. You know, and you're being self-deprecating and he'll lose my number and all that. I never think that way. Here's what I'm most proud of. Because as I'm watching your show, I try desperately not to be, to over-critique. Comics do what they do.
Yeah.
They got to work it out. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to give you, here's what you got to do. But what I did think tonight was... God, he's going to sweat like a mofo in this room. No, what I thought tonight was, I'm sitting there going, okay, my thought was, as we got towards the end, I'm like, boy, my only thing that I would say is slow down. Mm-hmm. And what's the first thing out of your mouth before I even said it is that you said it right here. I know, number one, slow down.
Right.
The fact that you know that's what I'm so pleased about.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of comics, and you know these, both of you know these, all three of us, that will go, I killed. That was great. You know when you hit it, you know when you didn't, and you, more importantly, you know what you have to do to make it right.
Right.
That's huge.
But you could go on Facebook and say you killed it tonight.
Oh, God, yeah.
Comics do that all the time.
I have
take
video,
a photo.
So.
Yeah.
And one thing at this stage in your career, you can't pull up the weeds to find out how the flowers are doing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's a work in progress. Yeah. Take the last when you get them. Keep working on what you're doing, and you're going to be fine.
And speaking of which, keep working. So what's the goal?
Oh, boy.
Somebody, anyone,
yeah.
Bueller?
I'd love to keep doing this. I'd love to keep growing. I mean, I don't have to be someone who does this every week, but I would love to, you know, do more featuring and then finally do a headline stuff. I would love to keep going and keep growing and keep learning. It's such a fun time. And even if, like, sometimes I don't do it for weeks at a time, but when I do, it's just a super rush. And you just, it's like a thing that I'm not addicted to. I don't have to chase it. But when it's there, man, I enjoy every single second of it.
And I want both of you to know this. I just thought of this. I've been fortunate enough to book both of you throughout the last year and a half or so. But I just added in my head the amount of money that you guys have made from here and whatever. They're just starting, basically, a couple years in. The first year in comedy, I did 326 shows. I still have the book. Mm-hmm. And I made $700.
Wow.
Yeah. It was like, so you guys are already making more money than we ever made.
The road you paved for us, John, will never be able to thank you enough.
But I'm not kidding. I'm so pleased with both of you guys and the fact that you have just done everything you're supposed to do. It is a work in progress. It's going to be great. And it's so funny. I will not lose your number, Ted. You will be. Matter of fact, you're here next month or 2 months
from
now.
Your candy hookup. Yeah. So you can't.
That's what I'm talking about. My bullseye bofo. So it's pretty good. So let's. You want to do these?
Yeah, we can do them. We're going to give you a couple.
What do we call these? We call them the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah.
But we're going to shorten that because some of these won't.
Since there's two of you, we'll do six, and that will be 12.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay. So I'll skip to halfway, and then you can skip. So
okay.
Let's go to number two. Single most influential comic, and you can both answer this on your own.
To be honest, the single, Pat McGann.
Really?
You asked me what it's like when I sit there and watch people and what I think about when I see him on stage. And while I'm never sitting there saying I'm better or worse or the same as any of them, Pat was the first guy and one of the very few guys that when they get on stage and I watch them, I go, dang. You know, a lot of guys, if I think they're fun or whatever, I'll laugh with them. Oh, that's nice and everything else, and this is a good show. But when I see him, I'm like, dang. And I go home and I'm like, that's a mountain that... You're never going to be able to climb, man. I mean,
just so you know, Tim and I feel the same way.
Exactly.
We've been doing it a long time, so that's a good call. That's a good call. Ted?
Thanks for going first, Brian. It seems like I'm going to go off your coattails. But, I mean, I've met all of you guys. As you guys talk about, you've come from the same group where, you know, John and Tim and Pat and Mike Toomey and Mike Preston, all you guys, you're influential to me because I can talk to you one-on-one and talk to you personally. It's not just about what you do on stage, but what you've said to me off stage and how supportive you've been. So just this whole group that I've met through working at Zanies for a little bit and doing these shows. The Chicago local comedians have been really influential to me.
Yeah, and that's a good question. That's a good answer because I like the fact that it is you're seeing a supportive side and you're not getting jaded. Mm-hmm. You know, that's partly you too, you guys as well. Person who everyone else thinks is funny.
Go ahead, Ted, first.
But you don't.
Pat McGann.
Good God.
No, it's funny. It's like you were talking about Seinfeld earlier. Like I never got into Seinfeld as much as everyone else. It's not like I don't think he's funny. I just never saw the same thing as everyone else did.
Right.
I didn't think he was bad. I didn't think he was anything. It just wasn't for me.
Not your flavor, right?
Yeah.
That's good. Brian?
Man, I'm thinking more along the lines of like real famous... For some reason, the name Louis C.K. jumps into my head. I know everybody before everything they have. Everybody was just so head over heels. And I'd watch him, and I just was like, okay, a little... You know, I wasn't blown away like he was some transcendent being that I couldn't handle. I just... So it's not so much, I guess, that I don't think he's not funny as much as I just didn't think that he was this world beater that everybody else did.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yes, I guess you're right.
It's kind of a weird one, but at this point, one of our questions is the venue which is on your bucket list. If there is a place that you, right now in your head, you're like, man, if I ever do that, let's put it that way, if I ever perform there at this position, I know... I've made it.
Whew. I can go on this if you never.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I saw a show recently at the Chicago Theater, and there was a local guy that did a middle set. He was maybe 3 out of 5, but because he was a local guy, they gave him extra time, and that place just went crazy for him. Even though he wasn't the headliner, it just was that this is a guy that we knew. We rubbed shoulders with him, and now he's doing it. And just to be something like that, something local, but yet a named theater, you know, Chicago Theater, that would be amazing. I'm not saying that I do see that down the line, but if that ever happened, it would be mind-blowing.
Oh, that's good. That's a good.
Brian. Now, I'm sorry. I forgot it.
No, that's all right.
Part two of that.
You don't want my answer?
No, I definitely want it.
This may be a little bit weak, but I'm going to say my zany St. Charles. I've spent so much time in there. I go on stage every night to do announcements, but I've never performed jokes in there, and as many times as I've done it. And so I think maybe just for more of a... there's not like a place in my head that is like that peak, you know? Maybe the Vic in the City or something like that, but... that would be more of like the sentimental favorite. Like I finally got to do it in that room. You know, if I were a peanut vendor at Comiskey Park all my life, I'd be dreaming of pitching on the mound someday, kind of thing. And so that's kind of
you probably have a pretty good chance of being a peanut vendor.
Yeah. At Comiskey.
At Comiskey.
Right. Thank you.
Now, past or present, who a big name you'd like to open for? You have 5 seconds.
You know what? No.
Go ahead, Brian. I opened for Mike Toomey today. So.
Yeah, no, to be honest, that's one of the cool things about being around it so much is you meet all of these people. And, I mean, to me, yeah, there would be a lot of prestige to be able to say, I opened for Jerry Seinfeld or I opened for so-and-so. But for me, it's cooler, or at least when Ted and I talk and we're like, I'm on the show tonight and it's DeCoss and Preston and me. It's like, these are the guys we know, or guys from Zanies we know, or like a Jim Flanagan or something. Well, it's me and Flanagan and Banker tonight or something. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, we know we're going to have fun, so much fun. But having said all that, Seinfeld's a pretty big influence on me anyways, at least his TV show was. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the top of the mountain there. If you could say you opened for him, you're probably
absolutely.
Shame.
Yeah, no, I agree the same thing. It's just like you said, it's weird because we see you guys, and I saw you guys coming up, you know, and performing around the city, and the fact that now I'm on the same bill with you, it just blows my mind, but it's amazing. And it's fun, but I think past or present, I think Robin Williams, just because I think the energy in the room would be crazy, and I'd like to feed off that.
Can I change my answer?
Yeah, go right ahead. You do whatever you want to do, Brian. This
right,
is
no,
your room.
I'll stay.
Safe place.
And someone who... Everyone thinks it's funny, but you don't. I think. Did we ask that?
We did ask them.
Oh, that's what. That's.
That's okay. That's all right.
I think the heat in the room is getting to me now.
I know. Could somebody put more water on the rocks?
Okay, and if you could be any comic, if you could be any comic, it doesn't have to be your personality fits into where theirs is. If you could master the command, who would that be?
Jim Jefferies. I watch him a bunch. I wish I had his guts. People that know me off stage know that they'll tell me, they're like, why can't you bring any of this out on stage? Because I'm terrified to do, you know? I wish I had the guts to go out there and literally say whatever in the world came into my head. Mm. But there's a lot that I have to keep in there to keep people talking to me. So he's just got like the balls of just, yeah. I mean, there's nothing that guy won't say. And that's something that I admire.
Very good.
You know, I think it goes someone on the lines of like a Steve Martin, because that guy seems like he's not worked a day in his life from day one. He seems like he's always having fun. Mm-hmm. He's just waking up, making up as it goes along. I know he's worked super hard. He's done so much stuff, but he makes it seem so... you know, so easy and so laid back. It's amazing. I just would like something like that where you could just pop into any project, I think, and fit in.
Well, you know what? I think that John and I have learned something talking to you guys, because we haven't talked to any new comics in at least 22 years. No, but to hear your eagerness and your determination and your creativity. And like I said, you guys are funny people off stage, so we know that you're going to do well on stage. Thanks for hanging out with us.
My pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Blast.
This has been amazing.
Yeah, it was a good night. It was a good night. Thanks for doing this. This was good. So another episode of Sit Down Stand Up. Thank you, Brian Williams. Thank you, Ted Wilson.
Thank you to the Rao Theater.
Thank you to the Rao Theater for letting us use their hot box.
And we'll see you guys next time.
See you. Thanks.